three true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. You want to win that score sheet, you're gonna want to stay with three true outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I am your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and I am the commander of the Night's Watch. Joining us, as always, from our nation's capital, it's our faceless man, Jared Weiss.
Hello.
Jared, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
And unfortunately, Ben Murphy was our shocking death, character death. He cannot be here tonight.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't even in the books, which is weird. All right. So we have a I think it's a good show. We recorded it. We can vouch for this one.
Oh, it's a great show because we're not doing the talking.
That's fair. Always fair. we are going through your round 40 projections. We're doing a rule 4 draft preview, which is miles better than a rule 5 draft preview. Although I'd love to try one of those sometime. Hit me up, guys.
No one's challenging you, Ian. No one's challenging you.
But we're going to talk about some of the potential players out there, some of the pitfalls, and who you should draft. And the answer may shock you. It's not nobody. before we get to that, we unfortunately don't have much time to do questions this week, but we love questions. Please send them, continue to send them to us at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. If you have any specific questions about draft strategy or want to talk about any of these players some more, send them over to us. We'll try to field them, and if we can also try sending them to smart people if you need particular advice. Right? That sounds fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so joining us this week is Brett Sayre, editor of BP, podcast host of everything. He'll be with us in a second through the magic of editing. Howdy. So we are pleased to be joined today by Dynasty Guru and Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Editor. And I guess since we last left you, real life editor. Is it what, BP non-fantasy, the reality? I don't know the name of it. But anyway, we are pleased to be joined by Brett Sayre, director of all things. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thanks.
Not to put you on the spot, but I do have a quick accusation. Is it true
yes.
that you gave up the stash list last week because everybody was called up? And therefore
yes.
there's no one left? Stash list. Okay.
Yeah, it's the stash list with everyone being called up is going forward is now just going to be like that game recap that Ben Carsley put on BP Boston, which is still my favorite thing ever. Did either of you guys see that
game?
I missed it.
No. I should look at BP Boston, which I unfortunately don't.
I'm gonna have to send
it. Cooties.
I don't know how easy it is to dig through the archives, but It is one of my favorite things I've ever seen. It was just picture after picture of garbage on fire.
Yeah, that sounds like Boston season. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that covers it.
It was wonderful.
That's amazing. Yeah, so we are recording this mere minutes after Kyle Schwarber has been called up to the big leagues, thus completing the set. Again, not to put you on the spot, because this is a draft podcast, but who is going to be the number one prospect at the end of the year? Is anyone taking odds?
Number one prospect at the end of the year. I keep defaulting to people who are up.
yeah. Like, just assuming that no one goes back down.
From a fantasy sense? I mean, from a real life sense? Yeah, it might be Corey Seager. He might be the number one prospect in baseball at the end of the season, because I don't know. I mean, obviously, at the rate we're going at, he's probably going to get called up before this podcast even gets uploaded. But with Oliveira coming, I think there's at least a chance that Seager still has eligibility remaining at the end of the season. But fantasy-wise, it's either him or Miguel Sano. I think it's amazing. It really is amazing.
I think we've got like 7 days left on both of them. And then, like, I feel like we are just going to get to the point where the number one prospect left is like an 18-year-old with one eye. And then that's it.
Yeah. we could be there sooner than you think.
But anyway, we're not here to lament the lack of everybody in the minors. We're here to lament the quality of players taken in this year's draft. So we are recording this, obviously, next week for many of you is going to be the supplemental draft, where the draftees from the Rule 4 draft this year become eligible for the first time. And I can stop using the word draft in a sentence. So with that in mind, we've brought back Brett, who helped us last year to talk about a great draft, to talk about this one as well. So, and I guess I've kind of couched this in a few terms. So, Brett, we've heard overall that this is not a wonderful draft year. Brett, do you agree with that?
I think there are a number of different ways to look at it. I think in real life, it's a down class, obviously. I think there's a little bit more depth than I think people give it credit for. But it's you know, coming off of last year's draft class, it just looks terrible in comparison. From a fantasy standpoint, it's not as bad as it seems, because there's not a ton of, you know, really strong defensive position value players, which then brings us to the third point, which is in score sheet, this is a freaking brutal draft class. It is brutal. It's just, it's not good. And we'll get into why as we talk through the guys, but there's nothing good coming out of this.
All right, so
that was bitch. That was
those three of you who haven't turned off your podcast now.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, for everyone who hasn't turned off their podcast and gone, okay, I don't need to draft a rookie. But I also wanted to set this in context of the players who are taken. That I feel like in a lot of score sheet leagues, people feel obligated, like there's some social pressure to take the a draft pick in round 40. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you do. Like, I don't know. Like putting the fork and knife on the left side of the plate. I guess I should learn plate settings from plate settings prospectus as well.
I think it's the right. Although I was never very good at that either.
Yeah, I was. It's okay. My people are not from this country. I wasn't raised well. But nonetheless, so we have. So I was looking even before getting to the draft, I was looking at some of the players who are owned in leagues, and just a couple of players who jumped out. Nomar Mazara is available in 30% of score sheet leagues. Would you take Nomar Mazara over a large percentage of this draft, let's say?
I take Nomar Mazara over everybody in the draft.
Yeah.
Okay. I took Nomar Mazara in the score sheet league that we're in. I took Nomar Mazara, I think, in the 14th round last year, or if not last year, in March, whatever year that was, 3 months ago. I love Nomar Mazara. He's fantastic. Right. You should draft him over any of these people.
Right. And I feel like looking through the list, you know, I don't want to go into current prospects, but one that has been coming to mind on my watch is Gleyber Torres of the Cubs, who's available in 90% of leagues out there. And he's 18 years old, so this would probably be his draft-eligible year were he a high schooler in America. And something that I've been saying is I would take him over maybe not everybody in this class, but a large majority of it. I don't know, Brad, if you agree with something like that.
Yeah, I think he'd be top three in this class. I think he'd be either two or three for me. Probably number three. I do think he's got a very strong future ahead of him. I'd have him just I'd have him behind Brendan Rodgers, and I'd have him a tick behind Swanson as well.
Yeah. So, right. So when it comes to that, you know, I would say my advice, and again, not to speak for Brad, who's the actual draft expert here, is that keep in mind the players who are on the board, and, you know, maybe you may want to reach for a draft prospect with the 40th round, just because that's otherwise you may not get another chance at them, but just keep in mind that there are other ways to get prospects if that's what you're looking for, that a lot of great prospects remain available. But you mentioned Brendan Rodgers and Dansby Swanson. So why don't we get right into that? So you have Brendan Rodgers as your number one prospect. Is that right?
I do, across every format.
And what is it about Brendan Rodgers that makes him so gosh darn sexy?
Coors Field.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No. I'm kidding. He's a prospect who is not, you know, you hate to say guys are a lock to stick at shortstop, but I really like his chances of sticking at shortstop. He's got the chance to hit for power. He's got a chance to have a strong hit tool, possibly as good as plus. He's really all you're looking for in a fantasy player. And the fact that he got drafted by the Rockies is just, it's just icing on the cake. It's wonderful. It makes me so happy. But yes, he's a clear number one for me, and he was a clear number one for me prior to the season. I put together a top 40 amateur fantasy prospect list, and he was the top guy from this class in that list, and that was before Colorado or his strong senior year of high school. So,
yeah, nobody likes talking about their fantasy team, but I will for a second. So we drafted him in a score sheet league at the beginning of the year, where in a private league where you're allowed to do that. And I have to say, the feeling of like seeing in the mock drafts, like Brendan Rodgers get increasingly tied to Colorado, is like seeing two bars line up on a slot machine, and like the third bar is just like about to come in. It just the greatest feeling in your life.
It's wonderful. All these guys are good hitters. All these guys that we're going to talk about. But you know, I don't need to tell you guys how much of a difference being in Coors makes in any game, let alone in score sheet. I mean, it turns players into real good players. So, and we know what it does to really good players. So it's been a long time since the Rockies have had a positional player prospect like Brendan Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect meant to David Dahl or Raimel Tapia, but it's been a while. It's been since Tulowitzki. And you know, that's going to be the natural comp. And it's unfortunate for a couple of different reasons, but you know, it's a comp for a reason. It's a comp not because they're all that similar a player. It's a comp because they're just both really good.
Yeah, and the Tulo comps were there in April too. This isn't just a Coors thing. It's probably just a we know one good white American shortstop thing. But nonetheless, you know, there you have it. But we skipped over. So the actual number one pick was not Brendan Rodgers. Which I still don't fully understand, to be perfectly honest. But it was a player who you mentioned that you also like, Dansby Swanson, who was taken number one by the Arizona Diamondbacks. So you also have him as, let's say, a good number one. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I have him second behind Rodgers. I think he's a really strong. He's a really strong player. I think he's even stronger in score sheet than he is for standard fantasy leagues, but he's one of those guys that kind of just does everything. He's a shortstop. He can hit. He's got some pop. He's got some speed. He's an all around talent without anything extraordinarily impactful.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is he may not have the top end speed or something, or even the top end power to make it to your fantasy list. But
he doesn't have the oomph that gets him above where Brendan Rodgers is. But you know, Swanson's biggest attribute is his hit tool, and you know, he's a guy who could be a 300 hitter at the major league level, and that's certainly nothing to sneeze at. When he could also be a guy who hits, you know, mid-teens home runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good hitter.
Yeah, and right, and what is it? I still call it Bank One Ballpark. If Chase wants to pay me, they can. But that is also a reasonably good hitter's ballpark. It's not a bad place to land for him. So
yeah, it's a really good landing spot for him because it's you know, it helps power play up, and that's going to be sort of if there's going to be a lagging part of his fantasy game, it's going to be the power. But you know, if that park adds, you know, 3 home runs a year, those could be the 3 home runs a year that gets him to 20, which would be it's a big deal.
Okay, and so to me, and not to speak for you, it seemed like in the NL at least that those were the two standout names. I just putting together and ranking the list side by side. In the NL, I kept looking at this and going, "Oh, you should trade up." And in the AL, I was like, "Well, you can trade down, actually."
That is exactly what I was going to say. If you have the 3rd pick in an NL draft, you might as well light yourself on fire. If you have you could have an in the AL, you could have anything from 1 to 8 or 9, and yeah, it just might not matter at all.
Yeah. It's really remarkable. So do you have just to stick with the NL, is there are there names behind Rodgers and Swanson that we should be aware of? With, let's say, if you have the 3rd or 4th pick, you're not contending, and you just heard that, and you have the lighter out, how do we stop this?
Yeah, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, because the guy who I have at three, the guy who I have at three in NL formats is actually someone who I really like. It's Ian Happ. He's the Cubs draft pick, went number 9 overall. He's, you know, the Cubs have a pretty good track record with finding hitters, don't you think? Happ just is a guy who hits. The problem with Happ in real life is that, and this is the same thing we heard about Kyle Schwarber last year, he may not really have a position. He can kind of play second base, but 2 years from now, who knows if you're actually going to want to play him at second base in the majors. He could probably play left field, but you know, he's not going to be an elite defender out there, and he's really not going to add much on defense. So, you know, you're drafting him just thinking that he is a hitter, and then wherever you hide him, you hide him. And you know, I think eventually it will be second base. I think he'll fake it well enough to stay there. But Happ he's a really, really strong hitter. He's got sneaky power, and you know, the lack of a position I think is gonna hurt him as far as breaking into the majors, especially for a team as stacked as the Cubs are. Right. But you know, if I'm taking anyone at 3, it's clearly Happ, and it's not particularly close.
Okay, that's totally fair. I expect the Cubs to announce like new Calvin Ball positions at this point. Like, oh, he's gonna play mid center field. Yeah, that. They're like beer league softball team is going to be outstanding this year. But all right. So Ian Happ, you have as 3rd, a lot of the teams in the mid teens, I think, where you see other players who would be taken ordinarily in score sheet, went with younger players, a lot of high school talent. Is there any high school talent that stands out in the NL for you?
Yeah, the guy who's actually number 4 on my list drops all the way down to the end of the 1st round, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Nick Plummer.
Yeah, sure.
Plummer is the guy who went 23 overall to the Cardinals. He of all of the prep bats not named Brendan Rodgers, Plummer is the best one in my book. He's he gets dinged a little bit because he didn't play against the strongest of competition in Michigan. But yeah, this is what you get with cold weather kids. You get these questions as to whether were they playing against the best competition. The teams didn't get to see them as much as they get to see players, you know, in Florida or California, Arizona, good places like that. But Plummer can hit. He can hit for power. He's got some speed. He's not being talked about all that much, but he's got everything you want in a prep bat. And I'm really fascinated now that the Cardinals took him, because the Cardinals, again, are one of these organizations that, you know, you like to put a little bit of stock into what organization actually drafts these players, regardless 100%. Regardless of what situations they end up in. I mean, you talk about, you know, Colorado Shore. It's a great place to hit, but we're also talking about organizational talent. The Cubs find hitting talent. The Cardinals find talent. Some of these organizations just do a better job of others. And, you know, as much as we like to analyze what we know in the public sphere about these players right now, the teams know about 50 times more than even the smartest person in the public sphere knows. And if, you know, and these guys getting taken by the teams that I have, you know, an elevated respect for from a scouting and development standpoint, it ticks them up. It does. And it should.
Yeah. It feels like I want to say, I was just looking through the draft. It was like so many teams this year felt like they had a player that's like, or they took a player that's like, oh, that's so X team. And the Cubs were among them. We'll probably get through a few others before we finish, but a lot of prototypical drafts here. And Plummer, so I was going to, I do wish that Ben were here with us today. Not just because, you know, we miss him, but I wanted to make fun of Michigan because they start every game with a 1-1 count.
They do. It's ridiculous.
What's the deal, Michigan? You have somewhere to be? I've been to Michigan. That's probably not true.
Wait, this is true? This is seriously true?
It is seriously true. High school games start with the batters start with a 1-1 count.
Ben and I did a baseball camp when we were growing up that had that. We made fun of it for years later. We could not believe it was going on.
Yeah, I wish I knew why they did that, but I have no clue.
Just one of the many mysteries of Michigan. Please write in. So Plummer's one of the prep bats, and there were a couple others who went higher, so not to pick out specific players, but I will do that now. With the 10th pick, the Phillies selected Cornelius Randolph. With the 15th pick, the Brewers selected Trent Clark. These seem like, I could actually understand and kind of agree that ranking Plummer ahead of them. Are these mind traps for people who are just going down the roster or the list of players, or is there something to that? Let me actually add Tyler Stevenson, the catcher, perhaps catcher in air quotes, who went to the Reds at 11. Are any of these players appealing to you?
Yeah, I have. I have Randolph and Clark at 5 and 6 in my rankings in that order. I like Randolph's potential to hit. He's a question mark defensively, but you know he's at least got the upside with the bat that is worth paying attention to. Clark is a really interesting guy. He's not the toolsiest prep player, but he's got enough tools, and it's surrounded with a very solid hit tool for someone coming out of the high school ranks. So, you know, I think he's certainly a good prep bat in this draft. He's not a guy that stands out. Him and Randolph both. These are not players that stand out amongst the prep bats that were taken in the first round of last year's draft. And this is where you really start to see the drop off. As you build up to this draft, you can talk yourself into the potential that these guys have, and they certainly do. But this is where you really notice the difference between last year's draft and this year's draft. And these are players. Randolph and Clark are guys who will be taken in NL drafts later this month. And to be honest, I'm not sure they should be.
Mm-hmm.
It's it really depends on who's out there. And you know, we talk about this a little bit with Mazzara and Torres. You have to go down pretty far to get to where these guys are. You're talking about these guys are probably cracking if they're cracking the top 150, it's barely, they're probably lower down than that. They're probably in the 150 to 200 range. And I'm willing to guess that there are that about half of the population in the 100 to 150 range are currently unowned.
Yeah, I'm blowing up my, but it's not just, I had one player in mind. I won't release his name because it's a fantasy spoiler for me, but it's not, there are a number of outfielders out there in particular, or corner bats, and Torres is an example. You know, there are just players there who I think, right, these players would not stand out. I want to talk about a player who is either controversial or controversial to me because I don't get it. There are a few analysts, I think including at BP, who are really on the Kevin Newman train. Who Kevin Newman went 19th to the Pirates from Arizona. Are you there, or do you wonder if he can hit? Not to lead my opinion.
No, I'm not. I mean, I know Crawford loves him. I think he had him top five or top six overall in his rankings. But no, I don't. Not in fantasy. I mean, I could see him being a pretty good real life player, and even in score sheet, I just don't think he. I don't think he has enough in his game to make him a prospect that is really worth getting excited about. You know, he's a guy who can stick it short and can hit a little bit. He's got really no power. I don't see that changing. He's, I don't even know what the best what the best comp is, but he could hit 280 ish as a, you know, average, slightly above average defender in score sheet. Maybe I don't think he'd ever sniff a 4.8, and we're not talking about someone who's going to be, you know, like a pushing 4.9 in his defensive rating. He's someone who will be at the position.
Yeah, but I saw some Pirates fans just you know, some actually really liked the pick because for valid reasons, and others said, yeah, we just drafted Jordy Mercer again, which I don't know if that's true in terms of style, but maybe in terms of value. And I feel like perhaps it's the first prospect who ever burned you gets like seared into your brain. And I am a White Sox fan, so I'm like a Jeremy Reed kid. And you look at Dustin Ackley, you look at Zach Cox, and like a lot of these like line drive, low power college hitters just do not do it for me, gotta be honest.
Exactly. It's from a fantasy perspective, it's a frightening profile. It's become a frightening profile. And I regardless of the ins and outs of Newman's game, that, you know, that piece of it scares me. And that's why I'd rather take the chance on, I'd rather take the chance on someone, you know, guys like Randolph or Clark, who are further away and certainly have less of a chance of being major league contributors than Newman does. But I don't like where the upside is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally makes sense. I don't know if there's anyone who you feel like I've missed up at the top of the draft, but, you know, keeping in mind that we want to talk about the AL as well. There were some interesting picks, I would say, in the mid rounds. Is there anyone who stands out to you, perhaps after the first 20 picks or so, as a potential interesting player?
Yeah, I think I think a couple of names that I'll throw out. One is a little bit less interesting in Scoresheet than in standard fantasy leagues, but Scott Kingery, the second pick of the Phillies, is a second baseman who's got some speed, and I think there's enough in his bat to allow the speed to be pretty valuable in the fantasy context. He's, you know, obviously that gets devalued a bit in Scoresheet, but I still think he's a pretty good guy to follow. I doubt he, you know, I'm not in any NL league, so I'm not sure whether he'll actually get taken in an NL supplemental later this month.
Yeah,
but
I hope he's taken in one, because I just put in for him in an auction league.
but in a mixed, I think he'll probably still be out there at the end of the supplemental, and I think he'll be an interesting guy to follow. But he's certainly someone who you could grab with a pick in the second half of the 41st.
Mm-hmm. The Phillies seemed like I want to say I really liked the Phillies draft, actually, surprisingly. I thought they went anti-Phillies as much as I said that teams were going to type this draft.
Go ahead.
You said you had one other name too, so I just wanted.
The other one that I want to talk about a little bit is Donnie DeWeese, who's the the second pick of the Cubs. He's a center fielder. He's a college guy, but not a big program college guy. I think this goes slightly back to the point I was making before, although I don't want to hammer home because it's not the world's largest consideration. But Jason McLeod knows what he's doing with college hitters, and, you know, prep hitters too. But the Cubs are a very strong drafting team. He is a guy who will stick in center. He's got a really strong hit tool. I think he's got some secondary skills around it that are rather useful. But he's someone who I think will slip through every draft this year, mm-hmm. and is a guy who probably should be taken before before a number of other guys that will get taken.
That totally makes sense. And I think with Dewey, like you were saying with the Cubs, it's one of those interesting things where, like, as you're watching the draft, it's like a validation of the player in some ways, that you look at the player and you're like, oh, that's the kind of guy who would get taken by the Cubs. And then he does.
Yeah.
Or the Red Sox, or a couple other names.
Yeah. I mean, you get the National League just is just really weird after that. I mean, you get Tyler Stevenson, who... Is he a catcher? Who knows? Either way, I don't really think he can hit. You have Walker Buehler, who I really like if you could guarantee me he'd stay healthy, but that is a really risky proposition with him. Josh Naylor is a really fascinating player, mm-hmm. but not for Scoresheet. He's mm-hmm. a first baseman who's pushing 250 pounds. You know what that looks like. He's got big raw power, but, you know, he's not the kind of guy who I would be speculating on particularly hard in Scoresheet formats. And, you know, you get some interesting lower guys, but guys that are just not going to, guys that aren't going to get drafted and guys that shouldn't get drafted. I mean, I really like Mitchell Hanson, the outfield that the Dodgers took, I think it was 60 something overall.
67.
Yeah. Is he really all that different than guys like Trenton Clark? No.
It's a great question. He looked great, and he was the best player I saw in the one, like, showcase game that I watched, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he's all that different, but he's not going to get taken anywhere. So that essentially is the reason why I think taking guys like Randolph and Clark are... It's not a great proposition this year. That's where you see the depth a little bit. The, you know, that second tier of players, isn't really that much better than the third tier of players, or really the fourth tier of players. They're just the ones that people know more.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think there's actually one other place you see it, and maybe this is a decent transition point between the NL and AL, is that other than Walker Buehler, you haven't mentioned a pitcher yet. And part of that is the NL, but I think part of that is the pitching class that we have, where I think basically everybody just backed up in the spring, one way or another. You have players who came in with some helium in the NL, like Kyle Funkhauser and Nathan Kirby from Virginia, who kind of ended up at the end of the round. Was it Phil Bickford was the highest non-prep arm? Which, okay, that's a choice. And
no, Dylan Tate. Oh, you're talking about the NL.
Yeah.
NL. Okay.
Yeah, in the NL. Sorry.
In the NL, yes, I believe that is... He went behind Buehler.
Sorry. But, right, even in the AL, and to transition there, you know, you have interesting names like Brady Aiken, who everyone knows from the last draft, and Michael Machuella, who I was thinking was coming into this, you heard a lot of pitchers going. I thought he was actually going to go first among these injured weird pitchers, and he ended up going later than all of them. Are there any of these weird injured pitchers that you particularly like, or is it just stay away from the whole set, especially in score sheet?
I'm more likely to stay away from them in score sheet than I am in regular fantasy leagues, but I'm still buying Brady Aiken's talent.
Yeah.
If I'm buying anyone, I mean, Aiken is. I wonder if we've lost sight at this point of just how good Aiken was before he was drafted number one overall by the Astros last year. He is, if he were healthy, he would be easily the top pitcher in this draft class. He would have been the top pitcher in last draft class. I'm not sure when the last. He might have been the best prep pitcher drafted since Dylan Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
He's
a sterling success story.
And I mean that speaks to everything you need to know about prep pitchers. But you know, Aiken is—he's clearly got more risk than just a regular Tommy John guy. This isn't a Jeff Hoffman 2014 situation where we talked about this last year. I love Jeff Hoffman. I loved him last year. I love him now.
And he's coming back.
I love that he was still available for my 40th round pick in the league that we're in together last year. There's nothing not to love about Jeff Hoffman. Aiken, when healthy, is that kind of prospect. But the issues with his UCL that are not so straightforward are troubling. Mm-hmm. And that pushes him down to being my second pitcher in this class. But you know, even with all the risk, the fact that he's still the second pitcher on my list is a pretty strong testament to his talent.
Yeah, and I think you could make. I think in the AL, if you took him first and you were kind of a risk-loving team, I don't think that would be shocking to me. I wouldn't be offended. But who do you have number one on the... Well, I guess who's your number one pitcher? I'll start there.
Dylan Tate.
Okay.
He's awesome. I don't know whether it's going to work in the rotation long term, but he's just... His stuff is so good. Aiken included, he is the guy with the highest ceiling in this draft class. And he's a college arm, and he won't move as quickly as I think we expect college arms to move. But his fastball breaking ball combination. I mean, I heard from multiple scouts that it's the best fastball breaking ball combination that people have seen since Giolito, and it's impressive, and it's. I've heard Steven Strasburg thrown out there. I think that's a little bold, but you know, the raw materials are there for Tate to be an ace, and it remains to be seen what the Rangers can get out of him. He only has one college season being a starter, but he held his velocity deep into games really well, and this stuff is really strong.
Yeah, I also liked that he was the like one personable player taken during the draft. Yeah. Who didn't speak in a monotone, so that's a little bonus. He gets a 6 on the Kenny play tool for me for that.
Yeah.
But
you gotta have a little personality when you've been a closer at some point. He was a closer at UC
Santa Barbara. Yeah.
UC Santa Barbara. That's it. There are too many UCs.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Santa Barbara is a. Banana slugs are, well, whatever. Figure it out. Some sort of weird animal, I'm sure. So is Tate your number one overall in score sheet, or do you have a different number one player in the AL?
No, I have Bregman at number one in the AL. Mm-hmm. I think he's too safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it goes anywhere. I love Tate's upside to death, but the fact that he's a pitcher and the fact that he's even riskier than your normal college arm... you know, Bregman is about as safe as you can get. He might even be a safer pick than Dansby Swanson is. He's
totally.
He's going to hit. He's going to be an everyday player at the major league level. And I don't think he'll be a superstar, but he will be a middle infielder, and he will be highly, highly usable in relatively short order.
Yeah, it just seems like an ideal score sheet player. Like
exactly.
Slightly above defense and just all the tools there, like Swanson, but even
starting. Yeah, and I think he could be a really, really strong defensive second baseman if that's where he ends up. I think he's got the skills there. I don't think he'll play shortstop much, even regardless of the presence of Carlos Correa, but I don't think he's got the skill to do it.
I don't know what you're talking about. The Astros have a wonderful defensive second baseman, pause for effect. He works hard, although as we've learned this week, he's no Omar Infante according to America, so what can you say? So I'll just say this to the pod. I said this to Jared. I'm fine with what the Royals fans are doing. I don't care. Why is Lorenzo Cain a million votes ahead of Alex Gordon? Watch your own team, Royals fans, for God's sake.
Yeah, the Royals fans have never appreciated Alex Gordon like a fan base should. And it's frustrating. Not that, I mean, Lorenzo Cain is awesome. I love Lorenzo Cain as a player. No, I will take Alex Gordon 10 times out of 10.
Yeah. I'm fine with both of them getting to the All-Star game. I don't mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and watch the Royals take on the National League. It's my dream come true. But anyway, back to the draft. So, as we alluded to before, the AL seems, if anything, much deeper than the NL. Even if there's no one I would take ahead of Rogers or Swanson, let's say. Are there other names who jump out to you if you had the second, third, or fourth pick? Let's say, what's the top of your board look like?
Yeah, in an AL score sheet league, Bregman's at the top, Tate's at number 2, and then Daz Cameron's at 3.
Interesting.
Same argument as Bregman. He's too safe. He's a center fielder. He can do enough. He won't be there nearly as quickly as Bregman. You know, obviously because he's a prep guy, but he's number 3 in score sheet. He's not number 3 for me in fantasy just because he doesn't quite have the upside to warrant it. But mm-hmm. you know. For me to take either Whitley or Tucker ahead of him in it's Garrett Whitley and Kyle yeah. Tucker. For me to take either one of them ahead of Cameron in a score sheet league, I'd have to have a little bit more conviction that one of them will work out. And while I do like the two of them, I don't have that much conviction. I'd rather take the safer guy.
Yeah,
and honestly,
that's totally
fair. Neither of them are fourth on my list either. So,
okay, that's
I guess
fair.
I should
and,
probably
you
tell
know,
you
Cameron.
Who's fourth on my list. fourth on my list is I'm I'm one of the high guys on Carson Fulmer. I don't care about his delivery. He's just really good. And, you know, if he's a reliever, he's a reliever. But the White Sox have a good history of keeping these guys healthy and in the rotation. And if Fulmer is both of those things, he could be a monster.
Yeah, not to throw darts, but I remember the last White Sox who got knocked for that. And you know, I'm gonna get a Scherzer pretty soon.
It's not just a Chris Sale thing. I mean, same thing everyone said about Tyler Danish, and he's done nothing but succeed so far in the minors, and he's a much better prospect than people give him credit for. He obviously doesn't have the pedigree that Fulmer had, but you know, these guys that the White Sox just know how to develop, and you know, it's an organizational strength, and when guys get drafted that play to organizational strength, it's a tick up in their fantasy value. I mean, you could say the same thing, jumping back to the NL for a second, you could say the same thing about Phil Bickford getting drafted by the Giants. You know, those are the kind of guys that the Giants do pretty well with.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's worth a secondary glance than if he were drafted by, I don't know, the Diamondbacks. Some team that just does not have the same reputation of developing pitching.
Yeah, or the Orioles, but we know the Orioles draft strategy is taking people about 25 slots after consensus. which is working super well for them. I don't know why you would ever change. I feel the same way about Fulmer, that you know, I just remember like Sonny Gray getting knocked for the, like, there's just a litany of players. And the one downside, and because I think this is true with Tate, and we haven't talked about Tyler J, you know, there are a number of players who have the kind of bullpen arm tag on them a little bit, like maybe he's a bullpen arm, which is death on score sheet. I don't know if that's true in fantasy, like maybe less so, but you know, no, score sheet. Yeah,
it's less so, just because, you know, obviously if a guy like Fulmer flames out in the rotation, as long as he has his arm attached, I feel pretty confident saying that he could be a shutdown reliever.
Right.
And, you know, while he's certainly not a guy that you're going to keep in a score sheet league, if he's a closer in Chicago, he's certainly a good keeper in fantasy formats. So, you know, that's really where you see the differential.
But I would say my feeling with all of these players, and I, like, not to reveal too much of my own bias, I don't really love, like, he's a bullpen arm in general, because I don't know what that means. Everybody's a bullpen arm. Like, everybody's better there. you know, that I feel like there's a lot that these organizations have invested in Tate and Jay and Fulmer to say, okay, we think these are starting pitchers. And even if reality intrudes, let's say, to a degree, you know, I think there's a decent chance that they move into the rotation first. I mean, I feel like it would take a lot to knock them out of that path.
It would. They'd essentially have to do what Alex Meyer did.
Yeah, which takes a lot of work.
It does. It takes a long time to get there.
Got to be really uncoordinated for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And we'll deal with that. I still think Alex Meyer can't be worse than the broken down Ricky in Alaska, right?
you never know.
Yeah, it's possible. So we talked a little bit about Tucker and Whitley. Is Garrett Whitley Mike Trout, by the way?
Well, you would think so based on everything that you've read, right? I don't even want to give it airtime, because it's just so dumb. I mean, no one's talking about how Nick Plummer is Mike Trout.
And well, Michigan's not the tri-state area, so
exactly. It's a weird New York, New Jersey thing that's just turned into a conversation. I mean, Whitley's got tools, but you know, there are guys that have had tools coming out of that area, and you know, there's only one Mike Trout. So I like Whitley. I do not think he is in that realm, at least from a now talent standpoint. I mean, he's got all the tools that he could be an elite outfielder eventually, but You know, you could say that, you could have said that about Michael Geddes last year, and he's, you know, he's had a pretty good start to his pro career, all things considered. And no one's calling him the next Mike Trout. So why call Whitley the next Mike Trout?
It's time to start. Mike Trout's for everybody.
That's true.
So there's one player relatively high on my board who we haven't, well, we haven't talked about Jay either. I don't know if you have any thoughts there, but I was actually going to talk about Andrew Benintendi, who is a player who I like, who I guess you seem down on relative to me just by the absence of you bringing him up. how do you feel about Benintendi as a player? Just because I know otherwise I'll hear from Red Sox fans if we don't bring him up.
Yeah, Benintendi, you know, and this is a microcosm for a lot of other a lot of other guys that have done the same thing. Guys who are widely considered to be, you know, uninteresting guys going into the year they get drafted, mm-hmm. when they just come out of nowhere and have huge seasons, they scare the hell out of me.
Yeah,
and they, you know, you normally give some deference to to college bats over prep bats, just like you give to college arms over prep arms. But a guy like Benintendi, based on prior experience and based on sort of my lack of belief in him, I guess, I'm essentially considering him a prep prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And I like if you're just looking at upside, I prefer Tucker and Whitley to Benintendi. And he's down on my list. He's after both of them. But, you know, that said, he was extremely impressive for Arkansas this year. And he's got plenty of tools. He can play center field. It's not a lock that he'll play center field at the major league level, but he can do it. He could hit for our average and for power, or, you know, he could not. If he had done that for his entire career, I think we're looking at a guy who is probably up with Bregman for in competition for the first spot in AL leagues. But I'm not going to use my early pick on someone who had a couple month long breakout.
That's fair. So my one witness for my witness for the defense claim, it was a really good season, to be fair.
It was a wonderful season,
and good. Not just, it wasn't just like fluky BABIP, which is like number one, like, oh my god, this is not going to happen. But there was a base of power. It was in the SEC. He played well against SEC opponents, and you know, I do. We've been talking a little bit about teams that know what they're doing. Like, I do like to see a player get taken by the Red Sox. Sorry to say, but
not really.
No.
No, not anymore. It doesn't do it for me anymore.
All right. That's fair. You don't have a Trey Ball poster? All right.
No. No, I must have gotten lost in the mail.
Okay, that's fine. I don't know. I feel like in terms of bats, that we at least have similar taste, but maybe I'm thinking Theo-wise. That could be true.
I think the Red Sox are one of those organizations that I think inertia causes people to like who they take, but, you know, taking a step back, should we really be giving Ben Charrington and company that benefit of the doubt? I don't think we should.
All right, I'm riding that train into the. I still believe in their offseason, for God's sake. So Red Sox fans can send their hate mail and garbage fires to scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. I'll defend it, but yeah, it hasn't looked good in terms of, let's say, any on-field results in the majors or minors. So I can see where you might get that.
details.
Do you have any thoughts on Jay? I guess he went number six. He's the one top 10 prospect we haven't really chatted about.
I want no part of Jay. I think he's a reliever.
Yeah. Okay. I was really excited to see the White Sox not take him, because they were tied to him because he's from Illinois. And I mean, Wyler would probably help them, but yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the Twins have certainly not taken a lack of guys that they thought could start and have ended up as relievers. So, you know, talk about having a track record and an organizational philosophy. You know, the Twins have had the same people in charge for 25 years. So, yeah, this is just, I did not understand the pick. I know there are people who are high on him and think he can start, but I don't know. This just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I did like last year where the Twins cut out the middleman and just started drafting relievers straight out. Like, save time.
I know. But you can get him later. It's not a bad strategy. I like Nick Birdie.
Yeah.
Not for a score sheet, but I like him for real life.
That's fair. Yeah. Right. Especially compared to where you drafted him, for sure. So I feel like a lot of the AL value was front-loaded, and front and Daz Cameron loaded, let's say. Are there any names, let's say, after the set that we've been talking about who jump out at you as interesting in any way?
Yeah, give me all of the shares of Chris Betts.
Sure.
He's the catcher the Rays took in the second round. I don't like that Tampa took him because this is another team that has a bad track record of developing hitters. But
what do the Rays know about taking a high school catcher?
Yeah.
one of these years.
I know. Betts is a guy who can hit for, he's got a chance to hit for average and power, and who knows if he stays behind the plate or if he's any good. But, you know, if he stays behind the plate and he's not very good, that's a big win in score sheet. So I think there's at least a pretty good chance that he'll start his major league career as a catcher. And that's really all you need.
Yeah, that's fair. I just feel like in some league there's going to be someone who takes Taylor Ward of the Angels at 26, just because, you know, you're going down the list and you're like, well, that's the next guy on the list.
He's a catcher.
Right. For anyone who is thinking like, oh, well, God, I need a catcher, just take Chris Betts instead, and then take Austin Rye because I'm the last weirdo Red Sox fan.
Do not take Taylor Ward. That's an awful, awful idea.
Yeah. Speaking of awful ideas, it does feel like, not to pick on the Orioles again in front of Jarrett, but there are just a couple teams like the Angels and Orioles and that come to mind, at least. There are a couple others. Just teams who go off the board every year and just have abysmal farm systems. Like, I can understand going off the board if you're, like, Atlanta and you have a history of developing players from Georgia or whatever it is that you do, but God almighty, stop it. Just pick up a BA and fire your scouting staff.
Yeah, it's not a good scene. And the teams, you know, some of the teams around them are, some of the teams around them are actually drafting well. And most of the AL East just is not, this was not a good draft for the AL East in my opinion. Although the one guy who I will mention who I like, is John Harris, who the Blue Jays took. It was
29.
I don't know why he was still there. It didn't make any sense.
It was weird. Yeah, like
I like him better than Tyler J.
Yeah, and he was, you know, certainly in the mix there. I don't think he was anybody's favorite choice, but he was certainly getting some top 10 helium, and then just slid forever. My worry with John Harris is like, well, he's interesting because he's relatively unrefined for a college pitcher, and you know, I do worry about like velo guys without that command. Although, there are so many examples of that this draft. You may want someone who, like, he's not relatively unlikely to stick as a starter in this crowd. Anyone else in the, let's say, lower rounds who you'd be interested in? How do you feel about Machuella, by the way? Just because I feel like a number of people might.
The back thing really scares me. I mean, as much as the weird UCL thing for Aiken gets me nervous, the back thing for Maduel scares me more than that. And Maduel was not in Aiken's class when both were healthy. So I don't think he has the upside to really take a chance on him. I'd more or less, I'm ranking him, but my ranking is going to essentially mean that you're taking him off your draft board.
It's totally fair. And, you know, again, in a case of like asymmetrical information, the fact that he went 78th and seems to be willing to sign there, to me, speaks volumes.
Yeah. And if we're talking about guys who I kind of like, I'm going to mention two pitchers, both of them actually taken by the same organization. Tristan McKenzie went 42nd overall by the Indians.
CJ Edwards diet.
You have to look at a picture of him. It's just that says it all. But he's got upside. The other guy who I like is Juan Hillman. That was their second round pick, right? He wasn't a supplemental, right?
I don't have the dip. Yes, he's the second round pick.
He went around 60 overall. He was the next pick after McKenzie, and he's, you know, sort of like the opposite of McKenzie. McKenzie's more of an upside guy. Hillman's a guy who's a really good pitcher now, and you know the what he reminds me of a little bit is Jose Berrios. He's someone who is a better pitcher now than I think people care about, because everyone's just focused on projection. But Hillman is a guy who's good enough right now with some modest development. I think he could, you know, I think he could move through the system pretty quickly and become, you know, he's got a chance of becoming a solid mid rotation starter. And, you know, at that point in the draft, that's really all you can ask for.
And I did say this to Jared. Like, I don't know the backstory here, but do you think that Tom Gordon adopted him just because his sons became hitters?
It's quite possible.
And it's like, I need a pitcher in the lineage somehow. I gotta show that curveball to someone.
Yeah, but by the way, it's a wonderful story, Hillman's story, and how he became, you know, how he got involved with the Gordon family. It's just one of those good baseball stories that is worth reading about if you get a chance.
All right, well, definitely seek it out especially if you're mourning taking T.J. Stewart and Ryan Mountcastle with your top two picks, let's say, as somebody on this call might be. Hypothetically, yeah. Entirely. All right, that's all I got. Anything else from you? Any names that we haven't got to, or witty bon mots?
All the names that I would mention are honestly too deep for score sheet formats. You just don't. I mean, I could tell you that I like Josh Scores, but nobody cares. Nobody's going to draft him in a supplemental. Nobody should draft him in a supplemental. But you know, he's a guy who might get taken in drafts next year.
He's my favorite Spores yet.
Yeah.
That's right. All right, and one other. So deep name. Let's go. I've listened to the BA podcast. That was 2.5 hours. We could crush that. One more name.
Oh, that was my name.
Oh, that was. Oh, I thought you said two people. Okay, so Josh Spores.
Oh yeah, no, I like Spores.
All right, I'm into it. So absolutely drafted 1-1. I think if we took anything from that.
Yeah. I think if you take anything from that, you should take that from that.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, this has been really wonderful as always. And definitely, you know, there's no way that any of these opinions could come back to haunt us, which is what I like best about this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just go out and draft Noah Mazara tonight. How's that?
Yes. Go check if you're in one of those 30% of leagues. If he is, put him at the top of your queue and just sit on your hands.
Perfect. All right. So if people want to find more of these excellent opinions that you provide, where can they find you?
They can find me at baseballprospectus.com and on Twitter at DynastyGuru. And on one of my billion other podcasts.
Yeah. All right. The king of all media, Brett Sayer. Thank you once again for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always.
All right. Thank you guys. It was fun.
All right. well, that was a pretty great interview, right? And certainly not something that we just wrapped around.
I learned a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I hope you guys liked it. We try hard to get actual smart people to come on and share their opinions whenever they can. It's a rare treat.
So
we don't want to put too much of that out there.
But if you are a smart person or know one, by all means, let us know.
Yeah, that's true. If you have anyone in mind who you'd love to hear, we at least don't mind emailing people and looking like fools. So, or I know a guy who'd do it. How's that?
That's what happens when you don't show up.
Yeah. All right. So, on that note, Ben is not here for the best thing he saw this week. So the worst thing I saw this week, as always, is that Ben is not here. best thing I saw this week, as Jared pointed out, our last taking you behind the curtain, because I think we'd like to make this a little meta. Our last recording was on Thursday. This is Monday. I haven't had a huge weekend, so. This one might be a little shakier than usual. Of course, everybody got called up, by the way, as we discussed in the interview. On Sunday, Francisco Lindor and Byron Buxton got called up. Which is today when we're recording this, Kyle Schwarber has just been called up. It's great to watch because I feel like Major League Baseball hasn't been this exciting in a while in terms of young players doing amazing things. Does it feel like the minor leagues are just going to be like one guy holding? Okay. Like, I was looking back at the 2012 prospect list, which is the Dylan Bundy prospect year, for those of you who mark time that way, where one was Jerickson Profar and two was Dylan Bundy. It's starting to feel a little bit like that year. Like, Corey Seager's the last guy left. Corey Seager's not like a number one prospect, is he? He's like a nice player.
He's a good player.
He's a good player, yeah. But he's not like, I like, Mike Trout or Correa or Buxton or Bryant, like,
Yeah, but
real men.
If like a dozen.
Not somebody's little brother.
But if a dozen number one guys get called up, then.
Well, we'll see. Is it like, yeah, so that was interesting. In real life, so, okay. Not baseball related, but maybe sports related. Also watching LeBron James and Steph Curry be amazing would be the best thing I saw this week. Probably the best thing most of you saw this week. Many of you, except the one here who I'm talking to doesn't like basketball. Send complaints to scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. Many of you like basketball. Do you like basketball? Sure. Maybe. But do you like idiot announcers who, of the Best in Show or Dodgeball, an American Underdog Story variety?
Yes.
Of course you do. So there is nothing I like better than announcer speak. And I don't know what it is, but just something loving and gracious about the patter. Fortunately, there is now a team who has transferred this to podcast form. Jared, are you aware of the Pistol Shrimps?
No.
Okay. The Pistol Shrimps are and feel free to Google this, a beloved L.A. institution of 2 or 3 years old, where a number of Los Angeles female comedians wanted to play rec league basketball together. The most famous of which, probably Aubrey Plaza, but
a number of others. I have heard about this, yeah.
Yeah. A number of other well, you're a mild celebrity or a local celebrity, or if you're into comedy nerdery. So if your interest is in comedy and municipal recreation, you're probably me. But so they found it. They found it very difficult to form a league. So they had to kind of work a little bit to get the word out, and they did a super great job, to the point where they have turned this into its own weird local institution of like women's rec league basketball that now has a fan base, followers, and now of course a halftime dance show. And now a podcast. The podcast is by Super Egos, Matt Gourley, and Mark McConville. And if you like people saying inane things in announcer speak, Jared, is it not true that we do not quote Dodgeball to each other once a month?
At least. It's probably more.
And probably just for that. So... I would say do yourselves a favor. It's okay if you don't know much about basketball. They very much do not either. Like, if you're into things like, oh, they dribble north, it's great. But if you like weird analogies and loopy things said like this, highly recommend Pistol Shrimps Radio. Give it a listen. Jared, over to you. Good. What's the best thing you saw?
Man, that was good. So I was struggling for something, but then I got this email about an hour before we started to record the podcast. And so I got the coveted Jared Weiss at Gmail email address. And so I occasionally get emails meant for other Jared Weisses, clearly inferior Jared Weisses. But so, you know, as I mentioned, my brother got married a couple weeks ago. Good friend got married last week. Got one more wedding coming up. Got weddings on the brain. And this is a wedding email about these guys are organizing something for their friend who is getting married, I guess, this weekend. So they're organizing. I don't even know what it is. It's just like getting together before the wedding, I guess, is what they're organizing. And so it's in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Because sure, yeah,
sure.
So they're renting out a some hotel room, or I guess they're getting some hotel rooms, and like they're, you know, they need to know who's going to stay in these hotel rooms and who's just going to hang out for the day. And they're talking about, you know, what they're going to do. They're going to hang out, play some games, relax.
And just to set the scene, you do not know these people.
No, I don't know these people.
And they are on an email chain that went to you. Okay.
So they say they're going to hang out, play some games, have some drinks, relax, use the fireplace, and then in parentheses, really, there's a fireplace. As
I thought of everything, right?
I don't know who's amazed by the fireplace. I don't know. That seemed like not a thing to dwell on. Anyway,
I will say my parents once lived in Philadelphia for a year, and the only thing they said is there was no heat. So cold. Winter.
And then next morning, there's going to be exciting things like coffee, tea, cereal, oatmeal, fruit, etc. for breakfast. Then they're leaving for an activity. And the activity is, you know, the punchline here. I'm going to get to that in a second. But after the activity, they're getting the most delicious kosher food ever for lunch. And kosher food, for the guys who don't know, is not delicious ever. There's no such thing as delicious.
Yeah, Jared, what's the most delicious kosher food ever? As our resident kosher
expert. I don't think there's anything that's delicious and kosher. There's no reason that it shouldn't be. It's just that, I guess, kosher meat, right? Kosher meat's good. But then if you prepare it anyway, it suddenly becomes not good. I don't get it.
So they're getting a continental breakfast and then some slamming fish.
Even like pizza. Kosher pizza is disgusting, and there's nothing unkosher. Yeah, there's nothing unkosher about pizza. It's very, I don't know. At least in my head, there's nothing unkosher. I'm going to keep it that way. Anyway, so at 10:50 in the morning, they're leaving for their activity in Philadelphia. So it's this guy's getting married this weekend. It's the last time for these guys to bond. What are they going to do for this big activity in Philadelphia? We got all caps in bold. And I should mention the groom, his name is Bob. Their activity is they are teaching Bob how to ride a bike. Seriously, and I'm quoting now, Bob never learned how to ride a bike. We can't let him get married without living one of the essential fundamental experiences of childhood. Well, at least we'll try, and after we take pictures of him and all his safety gear, we'll switch to cool bikes called Surreys, Coupes, Choppers, and more, which we'll ride around the boathouse. So, I sent an email to my brother and the guy who got married last week, telling him that they should be grateful that they had me planning things for them and not these guys.
Amazing. Are you saying that you did not plan bike riding?
It was not involved. I mean, maybe I should have. Maybe I got it wrong, and that's what grooms want to do before they get married.
I'll be perfectly honest. I don't know how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
When people say it's like riding a bike, it's that easy. You don't forget. Like, I forgot.
You forgot or you never knew?
I learned at some point.
If you learn, then you're good.
Okay. I don't know if that's true. We'll test that out. But yeah, so I'm pretty jealous of Bob and his friends. So I hope everyone goes out there and has a weekend that's at least that wild.
I'm debating just emailing them, asking if it's okay if I join.
Trip to Cherry Hill. Oh, the best thing I saw this week. Do you remember Gus's
yes.
more famous chicken?
How could I forget Gus's?
Did you know Gus's world famous chicken, which is probably
no, it's
kosher,
totally kosher. Ian, shut up.
It's totally kosher. Totally kosher. Jared can have it.
So delicious.
And is also a Memphian institution. If anyone has been in Memphis or Mississippi or North Alabama, they probably understand what we're talking about. Everyone else, get yourself there. Or you don't have to, because Gus's World Famous Chicken is
what?
Now franchising.
Oh, man. Are you serious?
Yeah, breaking news. And the best thing I saw this week.
Now, have they opened any, or are they just plans, or are they just, you can...
Okay. Gus's World Famous Fried Chicken is now adding locations nationwide in 2015. New restaurants will be open in Atlanta, Georgia, St. Louis, Los Angeles, Fort Worth, Texas, Knoxville, Kansas City, Chicago, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania,
by
Cherry Hill.
Wow. Well, I think we know where we're planning our next road trip around.
All right. Gus's Tour of America. Apparently late 2015, so not there yet. Who knows? This could all disappear. Oh, but the best fried chicken
so
I have had in my life.
Yeah.
Without question. It was not even close. So I hope they turn into Five Guys. I hope this is not a weird Pizzeria Uno situation. That would make me deeply sad. But if we get the actual world famous fried chicken, what a great day for America.
Really is.
All right. On that note, thank you again for listening. Please send us your questions at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. We'd love to take the next week. We want our mailbag captain to be happy.
Yes, we do. We do have one or two good ones that are saved up, though.
Yeah, exactly. So if you wrote us and you didn't hear this week, we'll get to it for sure. But that's it. So thanks. So on behalf of the absent Ben Murphy, we'll come back soon, and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes, they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet. You're going to want to stay with three true outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes. Insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes. Come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes. The number one independent Scoresheet podcast in the USA.